Vivian cried with loud artificial delight.
I love a butter pie. Can I work the automat, Daddy?
Cousin Vivian asked. Mr. Enkian was not listening to Sam, Vivian saw from one eye. He was waving him angrily away.
Give your mother the gun first, Vivi, Mr. Lee said, still bending over the crunching apparatus.
From one eye, Vivian saw Cousin Vivian's skinny arms stretching out to pass the gun to Inga Lee. From the other, she saw Dr. Willander rise out of the bushes like a purple whale and go crashing down Endless Hill towards Sam. When the stairs zigged the right way, he jumped the balustrade in a whirl of robe and went down them three at a time in huge, limping leaps. When they zagged at the landings, he jumped the balustrade again and tore his way through the shrubbery. He reached the bottom while Mr. Enkian was still waving Sam off. Mr. Enkian whirled round angrily, and the two of them began shouting at one another. What a time to start another quarrel, Vivian thought, as her other eye watched Cousin Vivian fetch the little pot with a stick in it out of the antique automat.
One butter pie,
Cousin Vivian announced. She laughed jeeringly and began to eat it herself. Elia went tearing down the hill, following the broken path Dr. Willander had made. As soon as he reached the bottom, Sam grabbed his arm and seemed to be explaining.
Mean beast,
Vivian said, desperate to distract the Lees.
I'm starving.
She always was,
Jonathan joined in, shaking with nerves.
When I got a new automat, she poured quickset plastic into it, and I had to make do with the old one.
Serve you right for being so snooty,
said Cousin Vivian. She closed her eyes in bliss.
Oh, I'd forgotten the beautiful taste of these things.
When Vivian looked away from her out of the window, there was no one at all at the bottom of the steps. Even Mr. Enkian had disappeared. Mr. Lee gave up on the amplifier and turned it off.
There's not much anyone can do now, anyway, he said, looking tensely at the watch on his wrist. It's 11:55.
They waited, and the minute seemed endless. Jonathan switched on his time function. It said 6:29. They watched the green-lit second hand creep round to half-past. It had got two-thirds of the way when Vivian caught sight of a blur in the distance down the avenue of the Four Ages. It came closer and larger, with astonishing speed, and she saw it was Elio. Elio running faster than she could have believed possible. He was getting bigger and nearer, as if there were a zoom lens on him. She could see his legs pounding, his arms beating, and his head rolling from side to side, and she knew he was running flat out. But as fast as Elio was coming, the second hand on Jonathan's arm seemed to move faster still. It was nearly at half-past now. She could hear chinks and slidings overhead, where the works of the endless clock were adjusting to the shaking of the tower and getting ready to strike.
Elio is bringing the time egg, Vivian thought. But what if it's not the lead casket? Or what if it is, that this just helps the Lees to get their hands on it?
Boing,
went the great clock, burying everything around them. And as soon as it did, a tall young man in green strode to the steps and began jauntily and confidently to climb them. Chapter 17. Faber John. This young man was not the Time Ghost, but the Watcher himself, bringing the gold casket. He cast a solid shadow that folded across the steps. Everything about him was solid and confident. Elio was still running, off to one side. The Watcher was going up briskly, sure of his duty. And he was halfway up the first flight of steps already.
Boing,
went the clock a second time, and again everything burred. Vivian looked for Elio, but he must have reached the bushes. The only person in sight was the briskly climbing Watcher.
Here comes our gold casket,
Mr. Lee said triumphantly through the burring.
Boing,
came the third stroke. And the Watcher was suddenly struggling.
He laboured to put each foot on the next step as if his boots weighed a ton apiece.
Boing, went the fourth stroke.
He staggered onto the first landing and dragged himself across it by holding onto the balustrade. Doggedly, he began to climb the next flight, foot by weighty foot.
Now we know what's stopping him, Mr. Lee said, as the fifth stroke rolled out. It's those two damned guardians.
The Iron Guardian and the Silver Keeper had materialized at the bottom of the last flight before the tower. They were standing, waiting. As Vivian looked at them, her eye caught something purple and a glimmer of mine-suit down the hill beyond them, at the edge of the path. Dr. Willander had torn through the bushes. Then she knew what was really stopping the watcher. The time egg. It was the lead casket. They had been right. Elio was using it as a kind of magnet to pull the gold casket back. But he did not dare to be seen in case the Lees shot one of their hostages. When the steps zigzagged away from him, he could only come to the edge of the broken bushes. In proof of this, the watcher dragged himself up that flight, while the next mighty boing was ringing out. But Elio was waiting in the bushes at the second landing. The watcher lurched and almost fell to his knees. Vivian could see the gold casket, distantly, tall and heavy and glinting. The watcher held it proudly in front of him, which only left him one hand to drag himself across the landing with.
"He never does get to the top,"
Ingerlee said anxiously.
"We don't know that."
"He disappears on the 12th stroke," Mr. Lee contradicted her.
"Vivi, fetch me the silver casket. I'll give him some help."
"Boing," ran the great clock. Vivian had lost count by then. Cousin Vivian went to the pillar, licking her butter pie slowly to make it last. By the time she came back with a huge pearl-embossed egg, the watcher was on his knees, crawling near the top of the third flight. From the swirling of the bushes, Vivian thought that there were a lot of people with Elio, pulling one another in a line to help hold the watcher back. She prayed that Mr. Lee would not notice, as he took the pearly egg and bent over it. "It's funny," she thought. "I wanted the watcher to get up the steps when he was a time ghost. Now I hope and hope he doesn't." Beside her, Jonathan had most of his pigtail in his mouth. The steps zagged away from the lead casket. With Mr. Lee's help, the watcher doggedly plugged up that flight during the next great stroke of the bell. But he almost stuck on that landing. It seemed that the three caskets might balance out and pin him to the spot.
"Give me the iron casket, quickly," Ingerlee said.
Cousin Vivian ran this time and got back as the great clock went boing again.
"We are going to win, aren't we?"
she asked plaintively, as she handed the square rusty box to her mother.
"Of course, we are intended to,"
Ingerlee said. She put the gun down on the amplifier and bent over the iron casket. Now, by looking sideways at the struggling green climber, Vivian could see the force that was being used. It was roiling and streaking the air with nearly invisible halls, so that when the clock rang out yet again, burying everything, Vivian could hardly see the watcher. He was a green smear still creeping upwards. As the burying went off a little, she saw the whirling force bellying upwards to cover the two waiting guardians, then down to eddy across the watcher as he rounded another landing and toiled on to the next flight.
Boing,
went the clock. Jonathan murmured through his pigtail.
11.
The guardians were moving, walking slowly down to join the watcher. The watcher, still holding the casket carefully to his chest, seemed to look up at them.
"We're winning," said Mr. Lee. "They've had to go to meet him. Obstinate, isn't he?"
"Boing," went the clock for the last time. The burring died to silence, except for the shaking and chinking of the tower. The whirls of force died away too, fading and curling gently up to nothing. The watcher stood up, near enough for Vivian to see he was smiling, and climbed briskly to meet the two guardians. They turned and came up the steps on either side of him. Up they came, and up, to the very foot of the gnomon. Elio and the other people in the bushes, who seemed to be on both sides of the stairs, kept pace with them. But it was clear that the lead casket now had no effect at all.
"We've won,"
said Mr. Lee. The Lees stood and laughed at one another.
"Open the door for him," said Inga Lee.
"In a second," said Mr. Lee. "I'll just get rid of the hostages first. We don't want another Lee around to claim the city, and both of them know too much."
He leaned over and picked the gun off the amplifier. Vivian could not feel as if she was in a film then, though she wanted to very much. The gun was horribly real as it came up to point at her. And it seemed to be true, that all your life came flooding into your mind in your last moments. She thought of Mum and Dad, and London, and the war, and Time City. And she wanted to shout to Mr. Lee, "Wait, I haven't thought of everything yet." Beside her, Jonathan let his pigtail fall out of his mouth, and stood straight and lordly looking. But it seemed as if the guardians were already coming. There was the sound of shutters and doors sliding all over the tower, above and below. The yellow panels over the windows swept sideways into the walls, flooding the museum room with sunlight. Vivian's eyes watered, but she could just see the pillar in the middle go suddenly dark as a person rode up inside it. Mr. Lee turned and peered to see who it was, pointing the gun uncertainly. Dr. Willander stepped out of the pillar, bulging the strange material of it wide with the size of him. He was holding the time egg in one huge hand. It looked no bigger than a pigeon's egg. Mr. Lee fired the gun at him. Twice, two blunt coughing sounds. All that happened was that Dr. Willander gathered his shabby gown round him with his other huge hand and cleared his throat. The gun clattered to the floor.
"I apologize,"
Dr. Willander grunted to Jonathan and Vivian.
"I should never have let you get into this mess."
There was embarrassment all over his big bear's face.
"The truth is that I have to have this artifact in my hand before I recollect what I am. Oh, no,"
he growled. Mr. Lee was reaching for the silver casket.
"Oh, no. You drained that one and the iron one trying to fight this."
He held up the little leaden egg on the palm of his huge hand. The air was in transparent whirls and shimmers over it.
"All the force went back into this one, where it belongs,"
he said.
"Elio's idea. But you Lees couldn't have won anyway. Not with lead and gold both outside the tower. We just didn't want anybody to get shot. Now, I'm afraid I'll have to get rid of you."
Cousin Vivian took the butter pie away from her mouth.
"You can't get rid of us,"
she said.
"We're Lees."
"Well, what does that mean?"
growled Dr. Willander.
"You descend from a very nice young man who happened to wander into Time City from China a very long time ago, and ended up marrying the ruler's daughter. But that doesn't entitle you to anything, you know. I told you all that when you were 6. Now, what shall I do with you all?"
He frowned at the little grey egg, considering.
"I can't have you anywhere where you can get at that time lock in Lee House, and it'll have to be somewhere stable because you're all 3 thoroughly disruptive. Let's see. I think young Vivian had better go to ancient China.
Over my dead body,
Inga Lee exclaimed.
My daughter descends from the Icelandic emperor.
Well, then I'd better remove you first before you do anything silly,
grunted Dr. Willander. The rippling in the air from the time egg surged out to surround Inga Lee. Just for an instant, she seemed to be standing on rather soggy grass, beside a low house made of rough bits of stone. There was sea edged with ice in front of her, and a sheer and frosty-looking mountain behind. Then the rippling edges of the air surged together, and there was nothing but a cold draught, and a writhing swirl in the air where Inga Lee had been.
"What have you done?"
Mr. Lee said chokily.
"Sent her to Iceland at the time it was first settled,"
growled Dr. Willander.
"It should suit her. Her kind used to be known as a stirring woman there. For you, Viv, I'm afraid it'll have to be the last days of the depopulation of Earth. I can't have you getting together with her again. She pushes you into things. I'll put you near the last spaceship, and if you ask them nicely, they may take you aboard, but I don't promise you they will."
The ripples surged from the egg again. Mr. Lee was surrounded by a hot-looking concrete field, with pieces of broken brick walls sticking up here and there. He cried out,
"No, I'll reform." "You said that before, several times,"
Dr. Willander grunted, as the ripples came together again, leaving a hot wind and a chemical smell where Mr. Lee had been. Dr. Willander turned to Cousin Vivian. Cousin Vivian tipped her head sideways and held her butter pie as if it were a posy of flowers. A tear trickled prettily down her nose.
"You won't do that to me, will you, Uncle Harkon?"
she said in a little lisping voice.
"I'm only just 11.
As Dr. Willander opened his mouth to reply, Vivian said quickly,
"Would you mind waiting a second, Dr. Willander?"
The little eyes looked at her and looked amused. The big face nodded.
"Thank you,"
said Vivian, and she flew at Cousin Vivian. She seized the hand that was holding the butter pie and made Cousin Vivian stick the butter pie into her own eye. Then she snatched it away and forced it down the neck of Cousin Vivian's frilly blue frock. Cousin Vivian shrieked and kicked and fought harder than Sam. But Vivian Smith was something of an expert by now, and she held that butter pie inside Cousin Vivian's frilly collar until the cold part melted and the hot ran out.
"Ow!"
screamed Cousin Vivian. Vivian let her go.
"I've been wanting to do that all day,"
she said.
"I can't go to China like this,"
Cousin Vivian screamed. But she had to. The ripples expanded while she was still screaming. Vivian and Jonathan looked with great interest at an instant of rainy street and a house with tipped-up ends to its roof. A person in stiff robes under a large umbrella halted and stared at Cousin Vivian across his long moustache, looking haughtily, unable to believe his folded eyes.
"And that's that,"
grunted Dr. Willander, as the scene disappeared.
"Pity I didn't realize what they were up to before this. I knew Time City was bound to go critical when it got back to the beginning. That blinded me, I'm afraid. Let's go down. Would each of you take one of those caskets?"
Jonathan, rather nervously, picked up the jeweled silver egg. Vivian took the heavy iron box quite gladly. After all, it belonged to her own era. Dr. Willander stepped to the glass pillar again. They realized that it was no longer turning.
"Has the clock stopped?" Jonathan asked.
"For the moment."
Dr. Willander answered, bulging the pillar as he went in. He vanished smoothly downwards. Jonathan followed, then Vivian. It was just the same as going up, just as mysterious. When Vivian stepped out into the round ground floor of the gnomon, all 12 doors were open, and the Inuit guard was sitting on the floor, looking dizzy and puzzled. Dr. Willander patted his shoulder as he limped past.
"Feeling better now?"
he asked, and went out through the front door onto the platform at the top of the steps. Mr. Donegal was standing at one side with a group of patrollers. Elio was standing at the other side, panting, rather, with Semperton Walker, Mr. Enkian, Ramona, and a number of other people. Sam was sitting on the ground near his mother's feet. He looked tired, and his mind suit was indeed a mass of fluttering strips. Everyone called out gladly when Vivian and Jonathan came through the door behind Dr. Willander, but they did not move. It was clear none of them liked to get in the way of the three guardians. The guardians were standing in a row in front of the door like patrollers on duty, except that they looked a great deal more powerful than any patroller ever did. The Watcher of the Gold came slowly forward, smiling all over his blunt face, and held the gold casket out to Dr. Willander. It was very beautiful, a miniature golden model of the gnomon. The golden bell tinkled in the top as the Watcher presented it.
"One moment,"
Dr. Willander said to him, and he asked Vivian and Jonathan,
"Would you mind giving the other two their property back?"
Jonathan carefully put the silver casket into the long, shiny hands of the silver keeper, who bowed courteously as he took it. Vivian gave the iron casket into the eager, cloudy hand of the Iron Guardian. He rewarded her with a great smile, wide and sly, but she felt the same jolt of fear when he touched the casket that she had felt from him before. She realized now that she had had the same jolt off Dr. Willander more than once.
"Thank you," the Iron Guardian said softly.
He joined the other two guardians, and they all stood, holding their caskets out expectantly to Dr. Willander. Dr. Willander sighed a little.
"Very well," he said. "Now, I suppose."
He held out the time egg, and the three guardians brought their caskets forward to meet it. Vivian noticed that they were all exactly the same height as Dr. Willander, no taller, no shorter, different as they were. The four caskets came together at the centre of their four outstretched arms, where they wavered for a moment, and then dissolved into the small egg shape of the lead casket. As they did, three of the guardians shimmered also, and faded forwards and inwards to overlay Dr. Willander. For an instant, he had the long, mad face of the Iron Guardian. Then that gave way to the sad, polite skull of the Silver Keeper. And that, in turn, became the countryman's face of the Watcher of Gold. Dr. Willander did not seem to find this at all comfortable. He worked his elbows and stamped his feet, and a scowl of what might have been pain came across the four blending faces. But finally he shivered and harumphed, and took a look at the lead casket. It was paler now, with silvery and brown and gold streaks, and the air around it played in tighter and stronger whirls, shivering the front of Dr. Willander's purple robe. He nodded in a satisfied way. He was still Dr. Willander, but with a difference. His face was more shapely, with a long twitch to the mouth, which was like the Iron Guardian's, except that it had the nervous politeness of the Silver Keeper. His chin was the blunt and obstinate chin of the Watcher of Gold. When he looked suddenly and sharply over at Vivian, his eyes were not so small, but they were still bearishly shrewd, and they still laughed at Vivian.
"Know who I am?"
he asked her. His voice was less of a grunt. It blared like the Watcher of the Gold's, and was lightened by the voices of the Iron Guardian and the Silver Keeper.
"Still making fun of me?"
Vivian said.
Well, you seem to be all sorts of people. Perhaps everyone is. But I think you must be Faber John.
Everyone else gasped.
Correct, shouted Dr. Willander. She's got the right answer for once in her life. But then she has met all the other parts of me that were out in history, trying to hold the city in place.
Elio hurried forward and went down on one knee. Faber John, he said. My lord, you ordered me to be made...
Oh, get up, man,
said Faber John.
So I did order you, but don't start my lording me for that. I'm in a hurry to get to Ian Square.
He strode past Elio and away down the steps. He still limped a little, Vivian saw, as they all hurried after him, wondering what he was going to do in Ian Square. Time City was in upheaval all round them as they went down the steps. Vivian had grown used to the ground shaking, the way you get used to riding in a train, and she had not noticed that it had been getting worse all the time. Now it was really bad. The steps heaved under them with long shudders, and cracks appeared under their feet. In the distance, people were running across the Avenue of the Four Ages in order to get to the river and escape, and Vivian did not blame them. A particularly grinding shudder produced a long crashing over to her right. She looked in time to see the golden dome of the years slide away sideways and disappear in a great billow of dust. One of the metal arches in the avenue tipped, crooked, and beyond that, with a mighty tinkling, the blue glass dome of the millennium crumbled down on itself and poured blue shards into the River Time. Faber John simply limped on as if none of it were happening. Vivian found she trusted him. When they reached the bottom of the steps, she ran as well as she could over the heaving road and caught him up. Jonathan was beside him, and so was Elio, who was carrying Sam. Sam was leaning on Elio's shoulder with a smug and heroic look. He gave Vivian a two-toothed grin as she came up.
A lot of rebuilding to do,
Faber John remarked to her.
Most of it shoddy stuff, put up after I divided.
Something had happened to whatever made the streamers of light on the arches. They were producing wild, misty scribbles and making popping noises, although the first arch seemed to revive a little as Faber John limped under it with a time egg.
Did you know what was going to happen? Vivian asked, as they left it behind.
Well, I guessed most of it, said Faber John. Stupid of me to leave it all written down in Lee House, where that trigger-happy failure could get hold of it. But I thought my descendants ought to have a few clues in case something went wrong. So I didn't want the caskets lost forever, so I left some documents describing more or less what I'd done with them. I made the iron casket quite easy to find because that was the weakest, but it didn't matter if it fell into the wrong hands. I said where the silver was, too, but I took care to put it in such a confusing sight that it needed advanced technology out of late history to find. And I gave three different locations for the gold to muddle anyone who tried to steal that. Luckily, I didn't say a word about the lead. I hoped part of me would be here in the city to look after that.
And did you know about me? Vivian asked.
Oh, how could I? I didn't know about myself,
he grunted.
Oh, I spotted you were a sham, of course, straight away. Then I knew you were one of those time ghosts, so I figured that the safest thing to do was to take you on as a pupil and make sure you knew the important facts. But don't ask me to decide what to do about you now. That's the Time Lady's department.
This sounded alarming. Vivian trotted beside his huge figure in silence after that, and at arch after arch, each of which sputtered back to life as they went under it, until they were near the end of the avenue. There were only a few scattered people running away by then. As Faber John got near them, a house fell down and poured rubble across the road in a long sliding heap almost at his feet. Mr. Enkian jumped nervously sideways from it.
If you want to run away, Enkian,
Faber John said, pointing to the fleeing people,
feel free to follow those.
Mr. Enkian cast a tempted look at the river, and then drew up his chin in a very dignified way.
I am proud and pleased to stay and serve the city, he replied.
What a damned liar, said Faber John. Seriously, Enkian, I won't hold it against you if you want to go.
Said Enkian. Well, if you must know, the wide open spaces of history frighten me more than anything else.
Just like Jonathan, Vivian thought. It made her feel kinder towards Mr. Enkian. Perhaps Faber John felt the same. As they climbed across the rubble of the house, he said to Jonathan,
Keep reminding me not to bait that man in future, will you?
They went up the steps and between Perpetuum and Science,